Live Line on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry, bringing you great savings on curtains and bedding. Available all year in store and online at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Live Line. There are many, many aspects of the O'Toole report, the scoping report that we spoke about from the beginning of yesterday's programme with Stephen Hughes, who had a copy of it in his hand and led us through it as a survivor, and indeed as a number of other survivors. Lots of people are making reference to the Ryan report, which was a report published in 2009 into industrial schools. But one thing I was looking at last night was Lota School, run by, ironically enough, the so-called Brothers of Charity, which was a special school in Glanmire in Cork. And that featured, that actually got a chapter of to itself, so to speak, in the Ryan report. And there was horrific allegations of abuse. For example, and it's come up again, but it emerged subsequently, unless my memory is incorrect, that subsequently to the publication of the Ryan report, more documentation that the Brothers of Charity had not submitted to the Ryan report. Indeed, they said it didn't exist. More documentation about the horrific day-to-day lives endured by many of the young people. They were vulnerable young people. They had various issues, intellectual issues, and that's where they went. But subsequently, the Brothers of Charity were exposed as having withheld documentation to the Ryan report. There was no penalty as such. So how can you trust them to give documentation now to the new inquiry? And the figures of, remember, your O'Toole report is about sexual attacks on children, sexual abuse on children. The Brothers of Charity running Lota in Glanmire and Cork, the total number of allegations, as outlined in the O'Toole report, as we're calling it yesterday, was 166. And there was total number of abusers was 50, which is the greatest single number of abusers for any one school or institution. Willow Park is the other one that jumps out. We've been talking about that for a long, long time. Willow Park had an inordinately high number of young people being sexually abused and abusers. But there's Lota in Cork, 50 abusers, 166 victims. The schools for the deaf, the Holy Family School in Renmore, again run by the Brothers of Charity. It's not a school for the deaf, but the Holy Family School in Renmore and Galway had 119 allegations and 49 named abusers, believe it or not. So there's another religious order that should hang its head in shame. And the Dominican Sisters in Cabra, St. Mary's School for Deaf Girls, 63 allegations, 44 abusers. And as you dig down into the findings or the information gleaned from the O'Toole report, and remember, this is information supplied by the religious orders. Can they be trusted? Can they be trusted? And the Spiritans revealed that of all the allegations, 130 allegations, for example, in the various schools they ran, mainly Willow Park Junior School in Blackrock, 130 allegations, 24 abusers. And as you know, there's the Rockwell had 60 allegations, 18 abusers. Blackrock College had 55 allegations, 13 abusers. St. Mary's in Rathmines, as we heard yesterday, 32 allegations, 6 abusers. And the list goes on. And about all of that, the Spiritans, who still exist, and they're involved in, they call it a restorative justice initiative. But anyway, that's open for debate. The Spiritans, of all of those, only two people have been convicted from all the Spiritan schools, believe it or not, of sexual abuse. Shane Terry. Shane, good afternoon. Joe at RT.ie, 51551. Shane is now 52, and you were in Rockwell College, run by the Holy Ghost, the Spiritans, as they're now called.
Thanks, Joe. Yeah, I was reluctantly, I suppose, sent to Rockwell. in my early teens, back in the early 80s. And I suppose, firstly, I was just struck by the advertisement there for the abuse. And I was automatically thinking to myself, I wish that was around when I was a child, because I spent 36 years living with what happened to me, mm-hmm. with no help from anybody at all. Yeah, so I was in Rockwell, and I was abused by Henry Maloney. Yeah. And I suppose for 36 years, I blamed myself until I started therapy and I realized that had nothing to do with me and that these guys were professionals. And I was a vulnerable child away from home, and they saw that.
And Maloney did face justice in the end.
He did. He died.
But he was also he was convicted, and eventually, after pleading not guilty and being defended by the author, he eventually confessed in a letter to the Vatican of his sins. But anyway, that's no comfort to you, I suspect, at this stage.
No, and I have been looking for a copy of that letter. But let me just explain that Maloney was a well-known abuser within the Holy Ghost and Spirit and clergy and congregation. And since my very recent, like in the last 3 years, my understanding of what happened to me and the death of my father, which allowed me to say it out loud for the first time, I just realized the detriment that it had on me and my life and my relationships. And I started to delve into trying to find information about this guy and how it was allowed to happen. Mm-hmm. And I've met and spoken to many wonderful people over the last 3 years. And in front of me, I have a spreadsheet where I can follow Maloney and where he was.
Wow. Yeah.
And the level of abuse that the man perpetrated against innocent young people, whether it be St. Mary's at the start, where he was sent to Sierra Leone, to Bow, and then he was recalled back from Bow to Blackrock College, where he spent a year and left at the same time with a Father James Hurley, who ended up being the principal of Rockwell. They left and went down there together. And this man has been moved around. And the level of collusion that it must take to move somebody who is so well known and has so many hurt people in his wake is disgusting. And yet nobody is admitting to anything. We didn't know, we don't know. But everybody know. A man doesn't get to go to a different country and then come back and then go down to Rockwell, you know, to abuse some more without people knowing about it. And I do believe that James Hurley was tasked with looking after Maloney, either recalling him back from Sierra Leone or taking him into Black Rock for a year. Who knows what Maloney did in Black Rock before he went to Rockwell in a year? You know,
did you? I know the Spiritans set up an umbrella called Restorative Justice. Now, I was a former probation officer. My understanding of restorative justice was you would arrange if you felt in your professional skills that a meeting between the victim and the offender. Both would have to be alive. If that would be one, it'd have to be agreed by the victim, and two, if it would be useful to the victim, and if it would be part of an offender's restoration, his or her improvement and recognition of the extent of the crime. But the key was that the offender met the victim. And obviously, but now I don't know how we can have restorative justice when the vast majority of the offenders are dead. But anyway, that's what's going. That's what went on. And indeed, the O'Toole report says the vast majority of survivors did not have any confidence in a restorative justice process.
Well, I personally don't.
Why not?
Because I asked for it. Within 2 weeks of me making a report to my local Garda station, Henry Maloney was dead. And I had other abusers, physical abusers, in Rockwell. And the first thing I asked was, I want to meet this guy while he's alive. I need some sort of closure. You know, it would be cathartic for me. And I put forward the question through the guards and through the Spiritan organization to allow me to go and see this man. And I was told no. And so they are putting a fence, they're putting a shield around these guys and protecting them. Why, if they are spouting restorative justice, can they not stand by that? Every interaction I've had with the Spiritan organization has been labored, abusive, annoying. It's basically me reliving what happened to me down in Rockwell, which is control, which is abuse. I didn't want to deal with the Spiritans, but I was in desperate need of psychological help. And I couldn't afford it. And I asked a third party, Mark Vincent Healy, to act on my behalf. And I wrote him a letter of authorization. I explained the situation. I told the Spiritans I didn't want to deal with them, but I needed help. And I thought that they, because they had been saying they would help and they would offer therapy. I had my own therapist. And I wanted them to pay for me to go to therapy.
Which they said they would do for everybody. Without question.
Exactly. They would have preferred for people to go to their own therapists, which they had. And I decided, I said, no, I'm not doing that. I have a therapist. I'm perfectly happy. Please just pay for my therapy. I relayed that to Mark Vincent. I wrote him letters. I gave him a letter of authority. And they basically turned around and said that they would not deal with him. And if I was to get any sort of therapy, I would have to make contact with them and supply details.
Correct.
Something that I didn't want to do yet.
Okay, that's understandable. Say there, Shane. It's Shane Terry. Joe at RT.ie 51551. Now, as I said, the figures are shocking, but the figures only deal specifically with allegations of sexual abuse. And Dermot Flynn, this is the wall you ran up against, wasn't it, when you approached the scoping inquiry?
Well, it was, Joe. First, I had to go to the guards and make a complaint, which the guards were brilliant. They followed up on it, but there was absolutely nothing they could do, to be honest, because all this happened so long ago. Mm-hmm. So when the scoping inquiry was launched, I thought this was it. You know, it was an opportunity to get my story out. I did fill in their questionnaire for them. We exchanged emails for a while, and they basically said to me that, you know, you weren't sexually abused, physical abuse, emotional abuse, that doesn't really count. They didn't want to know.
Well, it doesn't. It's not within the remit of the inquiry.
Well, abuse to me is abuse.
I know. I take your point.
We all end up in the same place. We all end up with the same symptoms. You know, you were all badly affected by it. So they basically did, and I quote, wish me very best wishes for the future, but goodbye. We don't want to know about you. And it was a throwaway comment from one of your researchers that said to me, go and see a solicitor. You know, just, you know, in passing. And that's exactly what we did.
Okay.
We had a discussion here with the family. You know, I have to have the support of the family, because if we're going to take this on by ourselves, obviously no one else is going to do it. We can either just forget about what happened, or we can try and take on the Spiritans ourselves. We looked at the costs, the risks. Hopefully we'd have a house after it if we did lose a case, you know. I had full support of the family here to go for it. They wanted me to challenge the Spiritans. And I certainly wanted to do it. I didn't want to let them off the hook for the life that they had left me with. So we did get a good legal team. And more importantly, I had to have a medical team to help me through it, because I wasn't lying out of hospital either, you know. When we started dealing with the Spiritans, they know how to just really operate very slowly. They drag their feet with every possible thing. You know, it went on for months and months, and there was whispers always coming back to me about this could cost you, you know, you may not have a house to live in. Now, that wasn't said directly to me, but it was indirectly. The risks were put in front of me, and I have to say it was very worrying. When they realised, I think, that we were serious and we were definitely going the distance with this and we were going to the High Court, that's when we started receiving insulting settlements, you know, just to, not to go to court, we'd give you a few euros, you know, I'm talking about small amounts of money here. So we obviously, it was a bit like an auction, they'd offer you this amount today and next week they'd offer you another bit and gradually increase their offers to see if they could just get me to go away. You know, they obviously didn't want to go to court. But anyway, that there was going to be a High Court hearing, not the actual court case itself now, and this was coming up on a Monday, about a week away, and a couple of days before it, the offer came through from the Spiritans that they would settle the case for the figure that I wanted, providing we didn't go to court. And that's exactly what happened. I received a very large six-figure sum, which I was delighted with, even though it didn't make me feel any better. There's nothing I would do with that money, but I'm certainly happy that it's not in their bank accounts. So, you know, there's no non-disclosure. I can talk about it as much as I want, which was probably a big mistake on their part.
Dermot, just to be clear, the amount of money, the compensation that they gave you was for physical abuse.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, that's that's fascinating.
You can't really compare. Well, I mean, obviously, I feel I wasn't sexually abused. But
you were abused. You were abused.
Oh, well, listen, emotionally, physically, and years of avoidance of all these priests that we all know very well, that if they did get their hands on you, you were in serious trouble. I know for a fact that I was definitely on a list. I was being groomed by a couple of them. But because of the assault that I suffered when I was 10 years old, which was a very violent physical assault by a teacher, that turned out to be the best lesson that I learned in Willowark, because it taught me that very moment to steer clear of those teachers and those priests. So I managed to avoid them. You know, if they were in the hall, I was in a field outside. You knew who to watch. You knew who to keep away from. Yeah. So, and that's exactly what I did.
Well, given what I said earlier, I know it's hard to judge, but give to assess. Given what I said earlier, but for example, the Brothers of Charity in Lothian, notorious, seems they sent their sex offenders down there to those vulnerable young children. Had such a high number of allegations and a high number of alleged abusers, 50. Given that we now know that they withheld documentation from the first inquiry, which is the Ryan Commission of Inquiry, which will have the same powers, of which the new statutory inquiry will have the same powers. Given that the religious order withheld information, can we trust the religious orders to actually cooperate with an inquiry? They say they will.
Yeah, I certainly wouldn't. From my own point of view, you know, we took the money. There was no apology. There was no liability accepted.
Okay.
You know, there was no great feeling for me when a big cheque arrived on my doorstep, and it's totally irrelevant to me. You know, the main reason I'm here today is, you know, if I can get an opportunity to advise other people that have been insulted in Willow Park or Blackrock College, to help them take on these people themselves if the government don't want to do it. I've done it. It worked out. There is no defence from Spiritans. That's when they were asked for defence.
And
I'm
sorry for cutting across you, Darren, because I just want to reinforce the point you're making. Your letter of settlement sent by registered post to your home address was basically one line.
Oh, yes.
I refer to the above matter. Now I close a cheque in the sum of, in full and final settlement of your case, I will be obliged of you with acknowledged receipt of same. Nothing about what you went through. No acknowledgement.
Oh, no.
This could be a letter you got for falling off a footpath in Capel Street in Dublin for all the humanity that's in it.
Yeah. They don't, honestly, Joe, they apologise to everybody.
Okay, I'll go back.
Through the media.
Can I refer...
But they don't apologise to the victims. Yeah, well, you know, they don't.
Shane, I'll bring you back in a sec, but again, coming back to this non-cooperation by religious orders, I've been harking back to the Ryan report where I was sitting at this desk, so to speak, and the withholding, we now know, of information by the brothers, by the so-called Brothers of Charity. The De La Salle Order, which is the school I went to in Ballyfermot, they have... There are 84 allegations, 46 abusers. Now, there are a number of schools, obviously. By the way, the greatest number of allegations relate to the school I went to in Ballyfermot, the De La Salle, Mount La Salle, we called it. But anyway, this is what yesterday's report says about the De La Salle Order in 2024. Now, this story has been going on for years. The De La Salle Order provided total numbers for allegations and alleged abusers and categories of alleged abusers, and belatedly provided the names of their schools that were involved on the 4th of June 2024. 2024, this inquiry was set up over 2 years ago. Because of the late nature of this information, the details of the schools listed below and in Appendix 7 are set out in a more generic form than those of the other orders because the limited information provided and the short period of time allowed because the De La Salle Order only cooperated fully on the 4th of June this year, just in terms of basic stats. We haven't been able to cross-check these details. Now, I can tell you, the De La Salle, the school in Ballyfermot, to give an example, where I went to, which is the highest number of allegations for an alleged abuser for the De La Salle Order in Ireland, that school has been sold and is sold for countless millions, which I presume went into the coffers of the De La Salle Order, who I presume in the first place got the land free. I asked this before on this programme. Who the land came from, either Dublin City Council or Dublin Corporation at the time, because they were building a school. They sold it for an enormous number of apartments for, again, we don't know how much they sold it for, but you can imagine. But where has that money gone? Where has that money gone? Given that the De La Salle school that's now going to now become apartments well, had the highest number of abusers, alleged abusers, and children that were sexually abused in Annie De La Salle school. But there's more and more in this report, and all the evidence points that the, with few exceptions, most of these congregations and religious orders are extraordinarily reluctant and will go behind every conceivable legal trust. And I just point out, I'll read them, obviously Dermot, I won't give any more details because there are no more details in it. Dear Dermot, I refer to the above matter, which is Dermot Flynn versus Martin Kelly, for Father Martin Kelly, provincial leader of the Congregation of the Holy Spirit Irish Province. Dear Dermot, I refer to the above matter and now enclose cheque in the sum of the figures there in full and final settlement of your case. I will be obliged if you would acknowledge receipt of same. 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, 38 words, Dermot, for what you went through.
I know.
Back after this break.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Go back to Shane Terry before I go to Breeze in Castlebar. Shane, you mentioned obviously Henry Maloney, notorious abuser, being facilitated and moved around, and including to Sierra Leone, where he abused more children, even though he was a known abuser. And you say Father James Hurley, you reckon he was instructed to...
I did, absolutely. The man was a decent man. I don't involve him in anything that happened to me. I think he was trying to do the right thing. But I do feel that he was tasked with looking after this person, Henry Maloney.
And remember, one of the things in the Spiritans and every is not just a vow of celibacy, it's also a vow of obedience. It's supposed to be a vow of poverty as well, but a vow of obedience. So if you're told to do something, it's probably well drilled into you at that stage that you have to do the as it was said in the Ryan report numerous times and was said in this scoping report yesterday, almost without exception, the reputation of the congregation came above everything else.
Absolutely. It was like he was following orders. He was, when I look back now at Maloney, I can see how he groomed me. I can see how it all happened. But that's in hindsight. When you're a young boy, vulnerable in that situation, all you're looking for is a sense of safety. All you're looking for is a sense of love, understanding. And I think, as with most of these abusers, they're professionals at their jobs. That's what they do. They see the vulnerability. They see a child that needs something, but when it comes from them, it's not what the child needs. I was groomed in a music room. I made the mistake of talking to him about music, something that I loved, something, and he knew that if he walked around the piano rooms in the evenings when the kids were there by themselves in their own room, that they would be vulnerable. And he would check, knock in, check what was going on. And I blame myself for that for 36 years, for instigating a conversation. I blame myself for trying to create a connection, which every human being wants to do in their lives. They just want relationships, connection, and safety. And it never dawned on me. You know, it was in loco parentis. I was sent down there to be looked after. And it ruined my life. It ruined my life by this person, but I do believe that there is collusion out there. But I do also believe that all the documentation is gone. It'll never be found. It's like the shining light of this inquiry was that I got a voice along with the other people. As sad as it is, I felt like I wanted to be part of something and share what happened to me. So I feel part of something to do better. But I don't believe in the inquiry. I don't think that's going to work. I think it's going to be too late. I've spoken to 83-year-old men who were abused in America while they were in school in Ireland. Will they be around when this inquiry happens? I don't think so. I can't see it. But I have the Skokie inquiry beside me, and I feel solace in that. And it is some sort of closure for me. And I don't think the inquiry is going to do anything. You know, what would I like from the inquiry? Well, basic stuff. Like, I would like the incorporation of Louise O'Keefe's very brave court judgment that she got in 2014. I would like that written into the inquiry. Because all these people are getting forgotten about, you know, through the paperwork, through all the hoops that they have to jump through.
And what Louise went through.
Absolutely. So brave.
Single-handedly. And I know Dermot did the same in terms of the physical abuse. He was told that wasn't within the remit of the Skopje inquiry. So he very bravely, and a great risk, financial risk, pursued it himself. And then there's got this 36-word letter saying, here's a settlement. There wasn't even a good look in it. Breege Quinn, Joe at RT.ie, 51551 is the text number. Breege, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. Thanks for taking my call.
And thanks for making the call. Go ahead, Breege.
No, I just want to say that I was listening to you yesterday and I just wanted to turn it off because it was so distressing.
Yeah.
But I didn't, because I feel we all should be made to listen to it, or we should make ourselves listen to this stuff. Because I had heard the original documentary that Mark and his brother made,
David,
and it was the same. And I heard that on our own local radio. They broadcast it, which was fantastic.
Yes.
But that was one thing, and I just can't get over the bravery of these men, because the humiliation and what they went through was bad enough, and now they have to go through all this again. Why is it allegations of abuse? It happened. They said it happened. We know it happened. And yet we still have to, everybody has to use the word allegations. It's just heartbreaking. And Fergus Finlay, when he was saying yesterday about it's time to disband all these congregations, 100% he is right.
Okay.
You know, my way would be disband the church, but...
there's people's own faith. And personal faith and belief, and I totally understand that, and would
never question
that.
I was brought up But it's not the faith. The Catholic Church that I can see, it's not about the faith. It's not about the people. It's about the structure, which is the church. And that has nothing to do with whether you have a belief in God and in Jesus Christ and in spirits, whatever you believe in. Mm-hmm. To me, that has nothing to do with this church, which is a big business, putting away money, and as everyone has said, and which I would echo, that protecting the reputation of the church, of the orders, is so much more important than protecting children, the most vulnerable in our society. And the fact that it's, as you said, 2024, and still orders are only coming out with evidence now. De La Salle, as you said.
And, where are they gone? You know, where are they gone? They were late in cooperating. Even basic cooperation, not names of individuals, names of schools and list of schools that did allegations. You know. They held off. Maybe they were squirreling away the money they got from the sale of the school in Ballyfermot into a bank account in France or whatever, which is totally legal, of course. Bree, did you ever believe you would hear yourself saying, I think those religious orders should be disbanded?
No, I mean, I was brought up in, I mean, I'm in my 60s now, happily, healthily and in my early 60s. So I understand, I was brought up in a time when if you went home, you said nothing to your parents about what went on. You didn't, you know, certainly if there was abuse or if something happened, you never said it to your parents because they wouldn't believe you. I don't think we consciously knew in our heads they won't believe us, but we just knew. The church was far more important, and what would people think was far more important.
What would people think if they hear Breage Quinn on the radio now from Castlebar saying religious orders should be disbanded?
I really don't care what anybody thinks, because it's just the truth. And we have seen it, and we've seen it time and time again. And I have seen it not just here, I worked in Africa as well. And I think in I don't know how many years' time, what will come out of the developing world in relation to abuse. We'll be listening to Joe Duffy programmes in Africa, parts of Africa. I mean, Africa's too big to just call it one country. The countries in Africa will be the same, as we know from yesterday's programme, where those boys in Sierra Leone.
Yes.
Like, do they think they're somehow less important or something? Ship them off to Africa, it doesn't matter, type of an effort. Yeah, I just can't believe, I still can't believe that we're listening to this and something hasn't been done. And is anything going to be done? I wonder about the inquiry. But back to your question, I don't care what people think of me.
Okay.
I have my spirituality, whatever you want to do, that's my business.
You see, I was struck just, and I see you're from Castlebar, which is in Mayo, which is Knock, which is where tomorrow the relics of St. Bernadette of Lourdes will be arriving for a 2-month pilgrimage or whatever in Ireland. And we had people on the programme on Monday talking about this, and they were demonstrating great faith. And I presume, and I know the answer, but just help me with the listeners here. I presume you can see the difference between people who have a special devotion or a special faith to an individual saint, and then the institution of the church.
Well, that's the thing. It got mixed up. The faith is completely different to the church. The church is an institution. It's like a big business. It's a business that should be in court for so many reasons. Mainly for abuse and what they did and what they got away with. But they're the business side of faith. I'm sorry. Like, they're just the business side of it. And they know what they can get out of people. And they've gotten money. They've gotten land, as you said, about all that land that's now being sold by orders. They didn't buy that in the first place.
No, they didn't.
And
no, they did
they
not.
Just, but even with, they took... Now, this is my very non-educated about this type of thing, but to me it sounds like, or it looks like, they took the faith of the people and they used that so selfishly, but they used the faith of people who were good and honest. Like that lad, I couldn't get... It really struck me, that story about the boy in Sierra Leone whose father didn't believe him, and it took 40 years that the father... And that would have been the same thing in Ireland, we know that.
Yes,
my point was to come back and say that the bravery of those people that have come out and spoken, because that must have been so difficult. And then to get knocked back and knocked back, and still orders like De La Salle and all that can sell off their land and they're not counted and not said, no, give that back to the state.
Well, maybe we've asked the De La Salle again, and I've asked them publicly on this programme. I don't know where they're represented in Ireland at the minute, but can they tell us from the land, from the massive... It was at the time, Breed, I can tell you, the Dominican school and the De La Salle school in Ballyferm, it was the biggest school complex in all of Europe. There was obviously was a new. That's how big, to give you a sense of the space now, the Dominican.
Scale, yeah.
But stay with us, Breed, and Dermot and
Shane.
Can
I just make one more quick point before, in case again? I do, like, when I have worked with and know priests and nuns who are extraordinary people. Because especially when I worked in Uganda, and the work they do, there isn't one of us that would do a nape of it. So there is good people,
of course.
They need to be supported in a different type of structure where their goodness will be seen and get rid of those other...
But you do not support good people by protecting bad apples, bad people.
No. You have to find a way I just want to say that those bravery, I'm overwhelmed by the bravery of those men and the women with them and before them who've come out.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you.
I need to take a break. Shane,
okay.
Shane, I hope you all can save. I need to take a quick break. Joe at rt.ie, 51551 is the text number, and 0818 715 815.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe at rt.ie, Derek Powers in Dublin. Derek, you're listening.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Your school is in the scoping inquiry.
It is. Yeah. And amazingly, for the first time, it's actually been mentioned. I'm not going to mention it myself, if you don't mind.
Okay.
As when the Christian Brother, I had one of the first Christian Brothers in their order back in 1999. He received an 8-year custodial sentence for sexual abuse. He was arraigned. Charged on 156 charges of rape and child abuse.
And were you one of his victims? Do you mind me asking?
I was indeed. I was the first person to take the case against him. Yeah. I was living in Dublin at the time. It occurred in Waterford. I'm happy enough to just say that much. In a primary school. So I got advice at the time in 1993. I was only 23 years of age at the time. I'm 54 now. But at that time, I went to the Garda station in Rathmines. I spent over 3 hours making the statement. Okay. And this is the first statement against him. And that investigation then continued. And it ended in 1995 with a direction from the DPP of no prosecution. My family and I just left it for a little while to take a breather, and then we went and began lobbying. Nora Owens was the Minister of Justice at the time, and she was contacted, and she came back and said that unfortunately there was nothing she could do. It was simply a case of my word against his. But there was a breakdown in the investigation that we discovered when it did come to court, you know.
Okay. What was the court case?
I've been in and out listening and bits and pieces of it. You know, I've tried to move on with my life, but the bravery of the people that are talking, you know, is overwhelming.
And did you have to sit in court, Derek?
What happened was that in 1995, I then went to the Gardaí, who the investigation had transferred from Dublin to Waterford. And I spoke with a member of the Gardaí. I spoke with your research team just before I came on. So there's certain things I can't say and can't say.
I understand.
But it was agreed that the Gardaí would take it from there. And I gave the names of other people that I believed were abused by him in that school on the basis that we were being held back after school. Yeah. Now, I was being held back for a reason. I was 7 years of age, but my brother was 9 years of age. And unfortunately, he was in Cork University Hospital dying of cancer, and he subsequently died within the 6-month period that he was diagnosed with it. That brought Brother Kelly further into our family and into our home, and obviously gave him the area where he was able to groom and to do as he'd done. But Brother Kelly continued, you know, to deny me. The Garda involved, we then learned that Brother Kelly was then sent to England. Once the investigation had begun in 1993, the Christian Brothers removed themselves from teaching in Tipperary. Now, the fundamental point of this is that the youngest person in the actual case, when the case came to court in 1998, the end of 98, when he came to court, you know, was somebody that if the Gardaí had gone to Tipperary and not just spoken to the Christian Brothers in Tipperary, but went across the road and spoke to the Gardaí down there, they would have said, we're actually investigating him as well. And they didn't. That didn't happen. They never spoke to, you know, and they didn't have what they have now, like the pulse system where they can just put in a name and see exactly what's happening with an individual. So, unfortunately, that didn't happen. So the Gardaí then in Waterford began a second investigation, given the names that I had given of certain people. And it was then about 6-7 months later that I met that sergeant in the city. Okay. While I was walking through the city one evening, and he's dealing with something on the streets, and he just said to me, Derek, you wouldn't mind waiting for me for a moment. And I just waited for him. He came over to me. He said, we've got him. He said, I now have, at this point, he said, 5 people. So they weren't people that I spoke to about it. You know, just people I believed were abused, and indeed, you know, it was correct. Then, further to that, then, the Gardaí then, in their investigation, decided to then go to every school that Jack Kelly had taught in. And that would have been James's Street in Dublin before he came to Waterford. From Waterford, then he went to Naas, where other victims were found. And then indeed, obviously, down to Tipperary with their investigation, and that's where that person was found. And in the end, when we were going to court in 1998, I was told then at this point that he was going to plead guilty to everybody else, but not to me. Even though I was the first person that brought the case.
My gosh.
And I had the investigation between 93 to 95. From 95 then onwards, you know, and all the information that was there, he was going to plead guilty to everyone, but not to me. So therefore, I had to go into court alone and not with everybody else. I had to go into court and my case was going to be separately dealt with. So we turned up. I'm always grateful to Mr. Michael Lanigan, solicitor in Kilkenny. Michael took this case with me because I was a witness for the state, so I wasn't allowed any legal representation. And basically, the information or any information I wanted was given to me by the Gardaí. And also, great thanks to the late Billy McCarthy of WLRFM, who was always there for me, that allowed me on air and to put the pressure on when the pressure was needed to put on.
Billy,
so we turned up to court that day in 1998. I believe it was November of 1998. Mary Ellen Ring, and now a judge on the bench, she was state prosecutor. So I was brought into a room with her and the sergeant who was leading the investigation from Waterford. And I was told that there was a judge available, but there was no jury available. I had to make a conscious decision, you know, at that point, saying to myself, you know, I, at this point, had been waiting for between 1993 to 1998 for justice.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't getting it. And the only way I was going to get it was if he got a plea deal. If I dropped the rape charges, then they would do an arraignment on him. So I left the court, walked around with Michael Lanigan around the court outside, came back. This was the old court at the time, if you know it, part of the old forecourts. And so there was another victim there who was a personal friend and became a personal friend of mine. I had known him since I was growing up, but we became very close friends within the investigation and through the investigation. So I went with him and I said, look, if I wait again and turn around and say, go back to them and say, I'm not prepared to accept that. I'm going to delay all of you, you know, all of the other 10 people. There was 11 of us in total. And I was going to delay their justice. by me holding out to have this rape, these rape charges brought against them. So I made the conscious decision and I turned around and I said, what's on the table? And they said to me, 51 counts of of indecent assault and 2 of gross indecency. So the 2 of gross indecency would have covered the rape charges on a lesser charge.
Okay.
So I agreed with Mary Ellen Ring. I just said, this is, you know, an injustice. I said, there should be a jury here. The judges here, there should be a jury here. Why you cannot get 12 people from the public to be here today is beyond me. So, look, I went with it. We went into court that day. Unfortunately for the other victims, they weren't present in that courtroom that day, and they should have been. It should have been delayed, but they went ahead. The court registrar stood up, and it took over just nearly 30 minutes to read out the whole indictment against him, to which he pleaded guilty to every one of them. Okay. So finally, the end, he pleaded guilty to me, but on a lesser charge. He was then appeared again in the December, and at that point, all of the victims had attended, particularly this young man who had travelled from America to attend. And I'll say no more about that on that young man's place. You know, so but within that, Judge Frank O'Donnell was the judge who was dealing with the case. So all the guilty pleas, he took the victim impact statements. When we go back to 1999, Jack Kelly got up on the stand and he read from a piece of paper, read from his notes, his statement of apology, remorse and such, and it was hollow, you know, after all these years and denial and delight, particularly with myself, until the last moment, until he got a plea deal. We as victims weren't allowed to do that. At that time, you weren't allowed to read from a prearranged statement. You had to just, from what was in your mind. You weren't allowed at that time to give a victim impact report. You could give a victim impact statement, but you couldn't have a written one in front of you.
Well, the chances, Derek, no, what I'm thinking of, and I think it's incredible, the one, what you suffered, and two, what you went through, and indeed what you've gone through at this stage and then pursuing it. But I'm just thinking, again, back to the report last night, I'm trying to remember all the different stats from the De La Salle order said 66%, no, that was the Christian Brothers, there is bad. The Christian Brothers said 66% of their alleged abusers are now dead. So the chances...
Yeah, Jack Kelly is deceased.
Yeah, okay. Okay, so...
And
so
I had the Gardaí visit me here in Dublin, from Dublin, and inform me that he had passed.
Okay.
And just that I'm a Catholic, and I still am, and I wasn't going to allow Jack Kelly or his order remove my faith in Jesus or in God, and I wasn't going to allow that to happen, Joe.
Okay, well,
you know? So I just said, I'll pray for his soul, and that's all I could say.
Okay.
I know people find that difficult to understand.
No, let people hear it. Let people hear it and people make of it.
I heard your caller, that's probably still with you, Breed, you know, and when I went to secondary school, you know, I met some amazing Christian brothers. Amazing Christian brothers.
Yeah.
Wonderful men.
Okay.
And so I'm not tarring them all with the same brush.
Of course, no one is.
And I'm saying that the hierarchy.
We're all long enough in this.
Life
to know that people
now. I suffered long enough in hospitals because of all their denials and trying to put me down and
prevarication, diversions,
everything. Everything, Joe. They threw the whole thing at me.
Okay.
But I was blessed that I had Michael Lanigan, a solicitor, even though he wasn't getting paid.
Okay.
I was blessed that he was constantly there with me at the end of the phone to say, okay, Derek, you know, you should consider X, Y, Z, and his advice was so invaluable, to me, during that period. I couldn't have actually gone and fought these people just as a citizen and a victim.
Okay, Derek, thanks.
I became who I was then afterwards, and... when we're talking about inquiries, I just want to mention the inquiry, when the inquiry that was done, the Ryan inquiry, that began with Justice Mary Lafoy.
Yeah.
Justice Mary Lafoy resigned from when she was appointed, you know, to chair that inquiry. She resigned from it on the basis that she wasn't getting the information she required to conduct what she would see as a concise and accurate inquiry.
Well, it looks like
and she wasn't still, getting it from the order.
It looks like it's still going on. As I said, the she was right because the Brothers of Charity, in relation to Lota, she was right because they withheld documentation, serious important documentation,
and only
emerged 3 years later. And as I said in this inquiry yesterday, the scope inquiry yesterday, Mary O'Toole said the deal is on order are dragging their feet. But anyway, Derek, yeah, I'll leave it at that.
In 2024, I'm 54 now. This happened ended when I was 29. I thought. So when the Ryan Commission was then established and he took over, you know, I was informed that it was only going to deal with particularly those who were in residential institutions.
Yeah, that was a brief, yeah.
And it wasn't going to deal with anybody. And I was making the point, the whole can of worms is open now
and the O'Toole
report. It has, and one of your colleagues was on the news last night and she said this is only the tip of the iceberg. And absolutely it is, because this is only scoping.
Yeah. Okay.
And if you're only scoping, you know, and where did they delve in, Joe?
Well, they have to come up with it.
I assure you, as a victim, the amount of people who contacted me over the years, even in our own case with Jack Kelly, there was a huge number of people who at the time couldn't come forward.
Of course.
They had children. They were, they were young, just sitting out in life.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, they had children. They were only just married. You know, they were all in their mid-20s. And, you know,
they had to get on with the complexities of life.
They had to protect themselves and their family, so they couldn't come forward.
Okay, Derek.
I'd hope that this gives them an opportunity.
Yeah,
but can I make a point, and maybe it's the final point I make to you, that the Ryan Commission then informed me that the only thing I could do was turn up and give an oral statement to them.
In private,
My oral statement, once I gave it to them, would not be published.
Mm-hmm.
It was to be given and given in private, but never to be published. And that was only based on the fact that I had the first Christian brother in the history of the Christian Brothers and their order sent to prison.
Okay. Okay, Derek, again, upset for what was caused. He is coming in on the lines. People upset about what all the victims today went through. Thanks indeed, Derek. More on this after the break, though. I should point out, I mentioned at 20 to 1, I was talking to Louise, this breaking story in the UK. Britain's stardust is the Grenfell disaster in 2017. 72 people died in that fire. And the final report is out today. Now, it is an inquiry, so it's not an inquest. But basically, the report says that all the deaths were avoidable. Now, if there goes to an inquest, which can now happen, I suspect unlawful killing is going to come out because of the severity of the findings of this statutory inquiry in the UK, and it's going to have serious repercussions for an Irish company called Kingspan. They employ, wait for it, 22,000 people worldwide. They're based in Cavan. Everyone knows them. Well, Kingspan, according to this report, knowingly created a false market in insulation. They cynically exploited unsuspecting market with false safety data. And the list goes on. And in the last 5 minutes, Keir Starmer, the UK Prime Minister, has announced that from now, no company mentioned in that report in that way, and that includes Kingspan, will be allowed to compete for public contracts. Will be allowed to compete for public contracts, given the severity of those findings. And Kingspan do not. Well, people can read it themselves, but there's some damning findings, including that in one email, Kingspan officials in the UK joked about the findings of this Kingspan cynically exploited the industry's lack of detailed knowledge about fire tests. That's what the that's what the report said. They said tests were manipulated. The Irish building firm Kingspan, which produced 5% of Grenfell's installations, knowingly misled over its K15 product on high-rise buildings following a 2005 test. This was a false claim, as it well knew, i.e. Kingspan. Tests in 2007 and 2008 incorporating K15 were disastrous, and Kingspan did not, this is this inquiry, did not withdraw the product. And one, as I say, it has serious reputational and I'm sure financial implications for Kingspan. Keir Starmer has just announced that they will not be allowed to apply for any single public contract from now on, which is big business in the UK. And the inquiry also uncovered emails from Kingspan UK staff dating back to 2009 that joked about the fact that fire safety tests on K15, this product, were actually flawed, and that they misled the construction market with claims their respective K15 and RS5000 insulation boards could be used on high-rise buildings. And the other, it's a by-the-by, the other implication is that the main sponsor of Shane Lowry, our wonderful, wonderful golfer in Ireland, is Kingspan. Back with more on the inquiry into, the scoping inquiry into sexual abuse in schools run by religious orders after this break.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Jerry Pierce is in Dublin. Joe at rt.ie 51551 is our text number. Jerry Pierce, back to Henry Maloney, one of the most, insofar as this has any meaning, one of the most notorious abusers in the Holy Ghost Fathers. But he, as you say, he inveigled his way into your family home, Jerry.
He inveigled his way into our family home by way of a contact we had with a bishop in the family.
Okay.
Who asked us to keep an eye on him, as he was a lonely, introverted type of chap, and that he was living up in the Holy Ghost manor in Whitehall Road.
Okay.
And that he was lonely, and that he needed family company, and that he'd be very good company for our family, and very helpful to my father. There was 8 of us in the family.
Yeah.
9, actually. One died. There was 9 of us in the family. And he inveigled himself into the family and visited us periodically.
Okay.
And during his visits, he abused me. And he used to abuse me by way of comfort, by way of... He was a very charismatic man, very jovial man, but had a dark secret and a dark past about him.
Yeah.
And he was always interested in the boys' end of the family, not the girls.
And was anyone aware of your abuse, Jerry?
No one was aware of it except me, Joe. And I carried that with me for, I'll be 70 now next Sunday, believe it or not. And I carried it with me for the best part of 50 years. And it caused havoc in my life through depression, anxiety, despair, suicide, instances where I had to go to hospital for medical treatment for my condition.
Yeah.
All because of the guilt I felt I was the guilty party in this relationship with him.
And you were, what, 12 years of age?
12 years of age, and he never took off his collar in the house, never once. We always remember that. He always came dressed as a priest, by a priest, being a priest. He never, ever became a man. He was always a priest.
And he abused you in your own home?
He abused me in my own bunk beds. My father, we lived in a modest type of a house.
Yeah.
And a lot of us, and my father decided we would buy new bunk beds.
Okay.
And we went down to Bargain Town in Queen Street.
Yeah.
And we bought the bunk beds there. He came with us. He was a member of the family, Joe, and an inner circle.
Yeah.
And he came with us to buy the bunk beds. And he picked out the bunk beds and he put me on top. He said, Jerry, you can have the top bunk bed. and we can have great fun hopping up and down on top of the bunk beds. And when we came home, we got the bunk beds together and we dressed the beds, and he abused me on the bed there.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I'm so sorry to hear that, Jerry.
And there were other family members in the in the family who never knew anything about it.
And who did you tell in your family, Jerry?
No one. I told nobody this except my twin brother.
Okay.
And funny enough, he was oblivious to this completely.
Yeah, I know. That's the way they operate. They operate, yeah.
They operate completely oblivious.
Yeah, in secrecy. And Jerry...
And I was one...
And did you? Yes, sir. Were you aware subsequently, Jerry? I know you've kept this to yourself, but were you aware subsequently of Maloney's convictions and the allegations against him?
No, absolutely.
Okay.
I thought this was completely and utterly normal.
Yeah.
In actual fact, Joe, I know this by way of a perverse way of putting this. My father was a very cruel half. Gentleman, if I may say, who used his fists frequently on all the family, and Father Maloney seemed like a breath of fresh air of complete solace and peace. And I greeted his, if you like, his attraction toward me as being one of conviction of hope, peace, and relief.
Okay.
And it went on for about 2 or 3 years. Okay. And then he was moved then down to St. Mary's, and I think was in Rathmines.
Yeah, yeah. Where he abused.
He was dean of discipline down there.
Yeah, Mark Vincent Walsh is one of the people he abused. Then he was moved to Sierra Leone, where he abused children there. Then he was brought back to Ireland again. Again, nobody in power, i.e. his superiors, ever thought of ringing the Gardaí. Which is who should be phoned. And Jerry, have you ever felt the need to go for counselling or support or from both?
I remember one show. I was a rep for a company, sales rep.
Okay.
And I was driving my brand new Ford Escort to Ballyhaunas for a call.
Right.
And I remember thinking, what that man did to me was wrong. And I was wrong for letting him do it to me. And I deserve to die for this. And I saw a truck coming straight for me.
God.
And I said, this is it. I'm going to end it all now. I'm not going through all this all my life, feeling this guilt, feeling this harm, and feeling this total and utter letdown. So, and I went to 1-4, but the waiting list was miles long then when they started. And I went to
Great.
Yeah, so I'm with people who know and people who care.
Well done, Jerry. Well done.
So that's my story with Henry Maloney. And may he rot in peace. Rot is the word he should be.
And have you ever spoken publicly about this before?
I have indeed. I've spoken publicly. I've spoken publicly to people in different groups and people in different areas of my life.
But I mean, on a national platform like this, I'm saying it's extraordinarily brave what you're doing.
No, I've never done it. No, never. I've spoken to you, Joe, many a time on the radio.
Okay.
And I'm a regular listener and a regular contributor. Okay. I almost feel there should be a fee somewhere along the line, Joe.
Oh, Jerry, I love your sense of humour. Good man, Jerry. Jerry,
well, that's what got me through it, Joe. My sense of humour.
Well done. Now you know, I'm so pleased to hear you're involved with Aware. So you know the various organisations that are out there.
Okay. And I'm involved with a great group of people called Gateway.
Yeah.
Okay. Gateway Mental Health Network Group.
Great.
And I'm involved with them, and they're most considerate, most understanding, and most helpful.
Okay,
so
Jerry.
So, Joe, it was a part of my life that really blighted me for the rest of my life.
Did it? Yeah.
But I didn't go to any of the redress schemes. I didn't feel I wanted to bring it all back up again.
Well, Jerry, will you just stay with me for a second? I want you to talk to Shane. Shane Terry. Shane, you were abused by Maloney as well.
Yeah, I'm just struck by the damage this man has caused people. It's so upsetting for me. And the level to which he would stoop to do it. It just brings back the memories for me. He was a priest, yet he abused me in the church, on the gallery, beside an organ. That's where he got me. And for years, I blame myself because there was music in my family. My great-grandfather was knighted for his organ music. And that was the word that he knew he had me. He knew when he heard that, it must have been manna from heaven from him.
Yeah, but even that description, Shane, that Jerry used, of he kept his religious garb, his collar on all the time. He never revealed himself
never
as a man.
Do you know what? Even when he was a very keen photographer.
Okay.
And he always had a camera around his neck, especially in the school, and he'd be taking a boys left, right and centre. In fact, I still have a picture. I used to play in a band in Rockwell, and he took a picture of me playing guitar, which I have, which he gave me. And part of me wants to get rid of it, but the other part wants me to hang on to it. And it was just the level that he went to. It was just unbelievable to rape somebody in a church by an organ on the gallery overlooking the church where I had to go every Sunday to Mass in that church knowing that that happened to me. For benediction, I used to watch him with his robes on and think about what it was. And I became hypervigilant. And I spent nearly 2 years trying to avoid everybody, trying to hide, looking around the corners, making sure he wasn't there. But he still managed to get to me. And it's when I hear other people's stories like that, it's so saddening, because when you carry it with you for so long, when you carry it with you as an adolescent, as an adult, and you have that sense of worthlessness and hypervigilance and a sense of it was all my fault until somebody tells you it isn't.
That's exactly what Jerry just said, isn't it?
Exactly. Yes. Exactly. And it's so similar. And we're all individuals and we feel things in different ways. But there's such a common thread amongst all of this, and especially Maloney. And I just find it so upsetting that this was wholly avoidable, And I remember when I first rang Mark Vincent and he turned around to me and said, Shane, this was so avoidable. And I didn't want to hear it, but it's the best thing that was said to me.
Yeah. And Mark Vincent was also abused by the spirit
by
and priest Henry Maloney. Jerry, were you aware that Maloney was moved from A to B after he abused children, and including he was moved to Sierra Leone, where he also abused children rampantly?
My father was a great sort of a proponent of Father Henry Maloney, and he would regularly tell us of his promotions and of his movements around the world and what a great person he was, and we should all aspire to be like him.
My God.
Because he had
They didn't call him Hawkeye for nothing.
No, that's right. Okay. And I gave a chap a lift one day in my car that I knew, and I knew he went to St. Mary's College. And I said to him, I said, how are things going in St. Mary's College? He said, don't talk. And I said, why? He said, we have a dean of discipline called Henry Maloney. And he said, the word is going around that he's a paedophile. And he says, we're all afraid of our lives to be left alone with him for 5 minutes. So he was notorious where he was.
And he got away, and he was covered up, and he was facilitated, and he was... Anyway, Jerry Pierce, Gura Míle Maga, Shane Terry, Dermot Flynn, Derek Power, Breach Quinn, and the other people who participated. Back after this break.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
By the way, if you do want to and have time to read or go through the Scope report, what I did and found very helpful is I downloaded it last night as a PDF. And if you download it as a PDF onto your laptop or your iPad or whatever, it means you can search it then for the school you went to or different names or different places, and it makes it extraordinarily accessible. And it is extraordinarily well written and presented as well, even though there are four volumes, 700 pages. But if you download it as a PDF, you can access it much more easily. Tommy O'Sullivan on sound, broadcast coordinator Shane Galvin, producer Tara Lockery-Grant. Ray Darcy is next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Their new autumn range will leave you bursting with ideas. View in-store or at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.